Now we've got two items. The briefing by the Auditor General on the highlights of the financial and non-financial performance of the department in the financial year ending 31st March 2010. And the second item is the briefing by the Ingonyama Trust Board on the 2009-2010 annual report, focusing on these four items listed there. At this point, can we get the apology? Consulting the department on apology.
I received an apology for the minister. Apology for Ms. Honorable Helen Matlanyana, Honorable Mandela, only two. Thank you.
We never have special requests when it comes to apologies. We take written apologies only. Thank you very much. Can we? Can we move on to the Auditor General, please?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Perhaps let me just take a moment to introduce the team that's here with me before I hand over for the presentation to continue. My name is Jan van Skalkwyk from Auditor General. I've been privileged enough to take over as Corporate Executive for this portfolio just before we hit the audit for PFMA. Two spaces to my left is Macian Kao, the business executive that's been involved for a number of periods around this audit. And then the young gentleman that's sitting on my left that will be taking us through the presentation on this Abdoulaye. Chair, perhaps I just need to make sure that everybody's got handouts of the slides that we intend running through. Okay. Can I hand over to you then?
Thank you, sir. The pleasure for me to brief the committee today on financial and non-financial performance of the Department of Rural Development. Sir.
I have seen a hand and heard somebody speaking. I do not know what is the point. Host.
Yeah, I say something wrong. I have two voices, small one and the bigger one, coming together.
No, there's nothing wrong there.
Nothing wrong.
The gentleman comes to the committee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Our purpose today is to brief the committee on the financial and non-financial performance of both the Department of Rural Development as well as Nyama Trust. I take it through a slide. The first slide, the reputation promise of the Auditor General. The Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate, and as a supreme audit institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. As I mentioned earlier, the agenda discussion points will first deal with rural development, and thereafter we'll deal on the financial performance of Ingonyama Trust. The next slide, this is the highlights of the financial performance of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. You'll notice that we've given the brief overview and synopsis of the prior report findings, dating back as far as the 2005-06 financial year, going to the recent 2009-10 financial year. And you'll notice that this year has been only one qualification, that of tangible capital assets, i.e. immovable assets. this particular line item in the financial statement has been qualified for the last five successive years. There was a qualification in the previous years related to receivables of departmental revenue. This has however been resolved, but still challenges facing the department, but I think the department is well on the way to addressing the findings raised in prior years. It was also a finding that has been repeated for previous 4 years. I'll take the committee through the details of the various findings in detail, starting with that of the tangible capital assets. If you go to slide number 6, the findings for tangible capital assets was, as during the prior years, we could not confirm the completeness and valuation of rights and obligations regarding immovable assets. The immovable assets, as a committee might recall from prior years, the joint initiative between the, in order to address these particular issues, the finding is applicable to both the National Department of Public Works as well as the National Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. In conjunction with the two departments as well as other stakeholders, Treasury devised something called a National Vesting Master Plan, and it set many milestones and targets for which the department as well as other stakeholders had to achieve. The target set for the 2010 financial period was however not achieved by the department as well as the other stakeholders. So going forward, in order for the department to ensure that there is no repeat finding as it has been in the previous five consecutive years, there needs to be an implementation of the milestone set as per the National Vesting Master Plan, and thus entails the surveying of all unsurveyed state land. The deadline for the overall deadline for this is March 2012. But in order to achieve that, the individual milestones will need to be achieved. Together with that, they need to, the departments concerned will need to vest all state lands appropriately. And the overall deadline for that is March 2014. So the department as well as public works need to ensure, along with other stakeholders, the deadlines are achieved. Going back to slide 4, you notice there's one particular new emphasis on that paragraph that is material losses to criminal conduct. This was not in the prior years. It's the first time that this finding is in the audit report for the department. The department incurred disclosed 53.3 million rand losses as a result of fraudulent activities identified through forensic investigations in three land reform projects in the KwaZulu-Natal province. And this was as a result of fictitious beneficiaries, duplicate payments, and in one case, property registered in a name incorrectly in the name of a fictitious beneficiary. And the reason and the root cause for this was basically as a result of non-compliance with laws and regulations, mainly the PFMA. Because although the policies and procedures existed, it was not adequate enough to address the LRAD program, which is the land, the program for the land redistribution for agricultural development, as well as the controls the department had to monitor the LRAD program, i.e., the database of beneficiaries receiving. There was no database for beneficiaries receiving grant funding. So it was possible for claimants to receive beneficiaries more than once or to be duplicated on different projects. What we recommended going forward for the department is to improve the internal controls. I know the LRAD program has there's been a moratorium and the CFO and the TG can perhaps shed more light on it, but the LRAD program is officially stopped in April this year. But there needs to be an improvement of controls to prevent and detect irregularities. The department has indicated during the audit that they can extend the investigation across to other LRAD projects using the services of the Special Investigation Unit. So basically, this might uncover or may not uncover more fictitious beneficiaries as a result of fraudulent activities, perhaps in other provinces as well. In Notice and Audit Report, there are presently 32 investigations ongoing as a result of claims of fraud or mismanagement across the department. There's also been a number of investigations completed during the year. So in order to ensure that the entire scope of the irregularities are uncovered, the department needs to ensure that all investigations are finalized. We also had findings related to the fraud risk register and fraud prevention plan. Seeing that the department is prone to aspects of fraud indicators, it is necessary for the department to have an updated fraud risk register and a fraud prevention plan as required in terms of both the PFMA and Treasury regulations. Let's go back to slide number 4. There were other emphasis on matters that were reported, one being that of significant uncertainties. The department is presently, there's a number of cases pending against the department for claims for not honoring sale agreements. So basically, an emphasis on matter paragraph in the audit report just merely highlights that there could be perhaps more fruitless and wasteful expenditure as a result of interest being incurred for not honoring sale agreements as required. Irregular expenditure, also an emphasis on matter paragraph repeating from the prior year, although amounts have decreased substantially, the main reason for the irregular expenditure was a result of overpayments in terms of the Section 42D commitments, which could have been avoided had prior approval been obtained beforehand. The other emphasis of the matter being that of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. As a result of the significant uncertainties, the department paid a lot of interest for not honoring the sale agreements worth sellers for land, and interest was paid to the sellers.
Good.
As well as we anticipate that in a 2010-11 year, accrual and provision has been made for additional interest, which will need to pay, or which the department has paid and might still need to pay to honor the agreements. In terms of commitments, there's a big 8.3 billion rand commitment disclosed in the financial statements. But we draw attention to the fact that a material amount is disclosed in this amount of 8 billion where there's been no movement for a number of years. So basically, it's also an issue of uncertainty going forward in when the commitments will be honored. The other information we have is that of the, you can call it the non-financial information in your predetermined objectives, part one of the annual report, where the department reports on the strategic objectives, targets it wishes to achieve. Here we found that the controls were not adequate to address the reporting and compilation of predetermined objectives. And I'll take you through it in the later slide, which is slide number 8. Slide number 8 highlights, as per the annual report and what was reported for, strategic objectives and non-financial performance of the department. And it indicates that in some programs, the last column would indicate that for program 7, as an example, 85% of targets were not achieved. And in one case, program 5, all of the targets set in strategic plan that was reported was not achieved. The program that perhaps is the best being program 2, where 40%, only 40% of the targets were not achieved. And the reason for this being, like I mentioned, the controls that are not in place to adequately monitor and report on performance information for strategic objectives. We also reported, as per the annual report, for program 4 and 5, targets were not specific and measurable. When auditing strategic objectives or performance information, we audit using something what is called the SMART principle, where we look at the targets that set must be specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timeout. We found for program 4 and 5, targets were not always specific and measurable. So it's not easy for to report on what was achieved or not achieved. And for program 5, we found that there was no supporting documentation to substantiate what was reported upon. And the main reason for this, we attributed to root cause of that being leadership. We found there was no oversight on reporting and controls related to predetermined objectives. Many of these findings were raised in the prior years, and it's basically repetition of findings already raised. Also, just for the committee to note that for predetermined objectives, there's no audit opinion being given in the audit report. We just merely report on the findings. Slide 10 deals with the summary of financial information, which is from the income statement and the balance sheet, which shows that the total revenue for the year amounted to 6.4 million, expenditure 6.4 billion, expenditure 1.5 billion, and there was a capital expenditure of 35 million. There was a surplus during the year of 581 million, which is explained as a result of non-spending in Program 5, the Rural Development Program. Key significant financial information for the year, we've indicated the 53 million on material losses through criminal conduct, which is shown in the MCO matter, bearing in mind this could change pending outcome of additional investigations by the SIU or internal investigations by the department, irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we already spoke about the commitments of 8 billion and the contingent liabilities of the claims against the department. The next slide which we deal with is that of the financial and non-financial performance of Ingonyama Trust Board. Ingonyama Trust Board also received a qualified opinion during the current year. Two opinions related to qualifications during the current year. The one that in that of immovable assets, similar to the Department of Rural Development. However, their finding was more on the valuation of land, and there was the issue of completeness of royalty revenue. Issue of land was valued at 1 rand. However, in terms of the standards which is applied, which is CREP standards, the trust should have valued the land. In case of the department, because it's on a modified cash basis of accounting, there is exemption from National Treasury to value the land at 1 rand. But however, because Ingonyama Trust adopts the CREP accounting standards, land had to be valued. So this was an issue that was reported also for the last 5 years. Other issues, the second qualification had been on royalty revenue. As auditors, we need to ensure that revenue is complete. That means, for instance, the amount disclosed for the current year was 3.4 million. Completeness assertion would mean that all revenue, there must be controls in place to ensure that all revenue that should have been received have been received. And this is one of the primary assertions that we have to be satisfied with in the audit. Hence, there was a qualification because the controls were not effective to ensure completeness of royalty revenue, and therefore also it has an impact on the receivables. And there is concern, I know there is issues related to controls, but going forward the trust will need to ensure that they have adequate controls to account for all revenue. Other emphasis on matters for Ingonyama related to significant uncertainty, similarly to the Department of Rural Development, trust is a defendant in a rates claim and outcome was pending year-end. So basically there might be implications on the financial statements for the current year as soon as the outcome of the court decision is made known. Another emphasis on matter was that of the statement of corresponding figures related to asset and lease income. Although the current year's figures were appropriately disclosed, that the previous year's in the 2008-09 corresponding figures were not adjusted. Issues were also reported on predetermined objectives, and like the department, in this case, no opinion is given. but which is reporting it, is reporting on legal and other regulatory regulations. The issues related to the strategic objectives is for slide 5, similar to this part as well, our type of controls on how performance information and strategic objectives are managed. Again, the SMART principles, it has found that certain target sets were not specific in timeout and therefore not meet with the SMART principles. And also, targets reported upon were not valid when compared to source documentation. Basically, the actual achievement audit check whether it is corroborated with supporting evidence. And we found for certain targets it was not. In terms of the summary of financial information, revenue increased from 40 million to 49 million in the current year, and expenditure also increased from 37 million to 39 million. And there was a surplus for the year of increase from 2.8 to 10.4 million. This is also shown as an emphasis on meta paragraph because the trust is waiting for clarification whether from National Treasury on the retention of the surpluses for the year. Thank you, Chair.
The proposal is that we go straight to Ingonyama Trust, and whatever questions for clarity on the what the general hold for a moment, so that we take them both together. Is it acceptable?
Thank you, Chairperson. May we start, sir?
I didn't know who was
the... Oh, okay, thank you, Chair. I'm sorry, I'm sitting at the back here. Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee and all present, we once again wish to extend our appreciation of the manner in which I think over the years we have come to work with this committee as well as the department as well as the Office of the Auditor General. Chairperson, our presentation is already available and I want to believe has been circulated. I think from the Ingonyama Trust point of view, because we have given responses in writing to the qualifications and matters of emphasis by the Auditor General, what would then be useful from us is that in our presentation on the first slide, it does give the normal background and the introduction of what we are going to be saying today. But for the sake of time, I will spend more time in maybe emphasizing where I think a need calls for that. The first slide, therefore, is just an introduction and what we are going to say, and the second slide talks to the land that Ingonyama Trust holds. What I need to emphasize as far as that is concerned, because it has got the impact on the applicable accounting standards, is that the land that Ingonyama Trust owns is not different to any rural and historically trust land which was held by the government over many years for the African people. Meaning, in other words, in other areas you'll find that a land of this nature is not surveyed, is not planned, is described in the deed office as agricultural land, but when you do a physical inspection, you'll find that instead of seeing maize and cattle, you see more people. So that is the context I think I want to emphasize on Chairperson and members. But also, as you would see, that we have given the statistical report as per the Bureau for Statistics in 2001, that the land that Ngonyama Trust owns is not its absolute land in that sense, but is the land that it holds ownership for, but on behalf of the people. You can see that at 2001, the people that resided on this land were just over 4.5 million. And I would not be surprised that 9 years down the line, this number might have increased by more than 10%, not only because of anything, but also because of the number of migration that take place. But what therefore this means, Chairperson, as a context, is that if we go to the next slide, it would be noted that Ngonyama Trust is a body established by an act of parliament to own this land and to manage this land for the people who reside on it. So in the strict sense, it's not just a body corporate that would run business and account to government for only for the sake of accounting and whatever surpluses, as you would note somewhere in the AG's report, that the surpluses which Ngonyama Trust holds, it must now get the authority of the audit of the treasury, while that money in the true sense belongs to the people on the ground. Ngonyama Trust sees its core business as that of real estate. Real estate meaning the management of land for the material benefit and social well-being of the individual members of the communities that live on Ngonyama land. It would also be noted that this comes from the Act of Parliament that no alienation of land or burdening of that land which it owns may occur without the written permission of the relevant people that live on land. Ordinarily, you would not find an owner of land having those restrictions, but this indicates the context in which Ngonyama Trust must be understood, that the land belongs to the people, it is merely an owner in law, subject to a number of restrictions, this being one of them. The vision of the board is to improve the quality of life of the people living on land on Ngonyama Trust by ensuring that land usage is to their benefit and in accordance with the laws of the land. And also the mission is to provide the best possible land management system to communities who live on Ngonyama Trust land. We note, Chairperson, that maybe whatever the history behind Ngonyama Trust might have been, the present-day context demonstrates that the people on the ground, especially people living on communal land as we historically understand it, do not have the capacity to manage land efficiently and beneficially to their benefit in the changing environment. And Ngonyama Trust, within its area of jurisdiction, closes that gap. The objectives are to formulate and implement policy, to provide an effective land administration system, to create climate which encourages development, and to extend security of tenure in accordance with both. I want to emphasize their customary law and leave other laws, because most of the time, Chairperson and members of the committee, customary law is always a neglected area, whereas a large number of people still live in accordance with custom and tradition, including the allocation of communal land, not only within the KZN where Ngonyama Trust is in place, but all over the country
where the government still plays the role which Wanyama Trust plays in KZN, you would find that the land allocation and tenure is still insecure, in that traditional customary law remains unwritten in, to a large extent, and also the land tenure system is not recorded. It is only within the context of Ngonyama Trust where I would call a far more detailed policy and systems have been put in place. The next slide, Chairperson, we just set out the structure of administration, starting from the executive authority in terms of the PFMA being the minister, the His Majesty being the sole trustee, and the board work with His Majesty, and therefore His Majesty is not the trustee in the conventional sense that he has got powers. Effectively, he does not exercise any powers outside the board. That is how the Act is structured, that when we make reference to the trustee, we mean trustee in board. In other words, the king works with the board, and hence most of the time his powers as the chairperson are delegated to the acting chairperson, and for that reason you will always find that somebody who do this presentation before you ordinarily would not be the king himself, but would be the person under his authority or designated by him to act on his behalf. And for that matter, most of the details in the administrative sense of the word are more vested and understood by board members than he himself. The board is an accounting authority in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, and that's the financial administration of the board. The cost of the board are met from transfer payment from the National Department of Rural Development and Rural Reform, and Land Reform, beg your pardon, and this is the amount which is voted by Parliament or appropriated money. At this stage, the operational costs are met from 10% or more of the funds that accrue to, through the activities of the board. The next slide, Chairperson, I deal with how does the board function, because the board is not executive. As I am sitting here today, my apology, Chair, I noticed now that I didn't introduce my colleagues, if I may do so now. In front before you, Chairperson, the gentleman with the beard is Mr. Amin Mia, who is the Chief Financial Officer, and I'm Jerome Gwenya, acting on behalf of the King as the acting Chairperson. And on my left, I have Pastor Zita, who is a board member. Those are the colleagues that have managed to assemble and were able to come to this meeting with me today. Other board members, through various commitments from which they couldn't get out of, have asked for apology. And I must apologize once more for having forgotten to do this introduction earlier on. Moving forward then, Chairperson, the board consists of 8 members who are appointed by the minister in consultation with the premier and the chairperson of the Provincial House of Traditional Leaders, as well as His Majesty the King. And then the board is supported by the secretariat, which is an administrative arm of the board, which does the day-to-day work which is supposed to be executed by the board. And therefore, in this slide, you would notice that these are the components or segments of the secretariat. For the last many years that the board has appeared before this committee, it has been noted, and at one stage it was part of the concern by the Auditor General, that the board was managing such vast land with minimum staff. It is the first time in years that the board is operating with a staff of about 20 at this stage. Before that, we've been operating only with about 9 staff members. But the reality dictates that we need even more staff, but that needs to be in process. And for that reason, I think in our discussion with the executive authority, we would reach a stage where the running of the board cost would increase dramatically as compared to the past. The next slide, Chairperson, deals with the nature of activities of the board, which consists of various land tenures on residential, agricultural, game park, conservation area, forest, woodlot, commercial activities, hotels. It would be noted, for instance, that in our annual report, Chairperson, part of the report we deal in detail with a hotel which is a project, a 100 million rand hotel which is jointly owned by the community and private investors. But there are a number of business activities including petrol filling stations, housing projects and aquaculture farming. The next slide, I'll just make a passing comment there. When we deal with performance analysis, it's merely the Act dictates that the board should transfer all property on which the townships are established to various municipalities. To this date, we only remain with two of the six outstanding townships that should have been transferred. Originally, there were over 30 townships that had to be transferred. Yes, the process has taken longer because of a number of complications and can deal with that if need be at a later stage. Likewise, Chairperson and members, the board continues to engage with the both provincial and national Department of Public Works with regards to state domestic properties. Maybe for the edification of the committee chair, if I may explain this, because with passage of time, you will find that at some stage, the department itself will have to deal with the same exercise in other provinces. As far as what do we mean by state domestic properties? What this means is that historically, you would find that in what was homeland or trust land under the South African Development Trust. Ordinarily, when the government would put a school, a clinic, a police station, and maybe public works infrastructure, those infrastructures were sometimes built without any formal documentation. And therefore, when you come to state assets, to public works, you would find that there is expenditure of a lot of appropriated funds by the government on land which, in inverted commas, it cannot prove ownership of. So in this context, when we talk about transfer of state domestic properties, we mean those properties which are owned by the state, mainly the schools, the police stations, and clinics, and other government infrastructure, which are owning Ngonyama land without the necessary document proving that they belong to the state. The process we are engaged in is to help the state effect a transfer on an acceptable tenure so that it can prove that although the land is owning Ngonyama land, that property belongs to the state. I thought, Chairperson, it would be useful to emphasize this because it also impacts on what the Auditor General says about the dispute about rates, because part of the dispute with municipalities arises out of very superficial, if not poor, land record, or in that in some instances, because state properties are constructed on Ngonyama land without documents, Ngonyama Trust find itself sometimes being asked to pay rates for property which, in the strict sense, it does not own. It's owned by the state. And that is how some of these disputes arise. Allocation of land for housing, Chairperson, I don't think that much need to be elaborated upon here. Likewise, the granting of leases, in my view, Chairperson, unless otherwise asked, I think it's self-evident on the slide that on regular basis that has become core function of the board in terms of granting leases, especially on commercial side. Because previously there was what was called PTO, that is permission to occupy, which initially was one of the offshoots of the Black Administration Act, which has since been abolished in its entirety. But what has been discovered over the years was that people who hold PTOs were disadvantaged when they wanted to develop land because that form of tenure was not considered acceptable by most financial institutions, and therefore people could not develop rural land, especially held by the SADT and Ngonyama Trust. So Ngonyama Trust over the years has instituted a lease form of tenure as one of the most acceptable tenure to enable individuals to approach financial institutions. But also, Chairperson, if I may say, the introduction of the Financial Intelligence Centers Act, which is briefly called FICA, has brought a number of untold prejudices to rural people who occupy land like Ngonyama Trust, where, in a nutshell, a person must prove before he could open a bank account where he or she lives. There is no utility bill there. And what do those people do? They are at the mercy of some of the structures which sometimes do not operate in the most acceptable way, and as a result, people have to pay money just to get confirmation that that is where they live. With the introduction, among others, of a form of lease, even for residential purposes, in our view, that has alleviated a fair amount of these problems because leases are a proof of residence, and that could also be confirmed by municipalities. It makes it easier. But I do think also, Chairperson, in the light of our previous presentation to this committee last year, that I need to clear this when we talk about registration of land vesting and trust and consolidation of titles, because I do not want to leave maybe a misunderstanding that the department is not cooperating. So the information that is currently here is somewhat stale because since our last presentation to your committee, the department has put aside, in fact, has appointed a person just to fast track the transfer to Ngonyama land, and a fair amount of progress has been done in this regard, such that if there is any backlog or delay, it's not as a result of the department, but it's because one, the state attorney sometimes wants to take more than it can afford to in terms of ensuring that the properties are transferred swiftly. Where we are, as we currently speak, Chairperson, we are at a stage where only few pockets of properties have not been transferred because of valid reasons acceptable to both parties, and we are all looking at a better mechanism of how best we can deal with those. you would note that if you were to add 300 parcels of land and the case authorization, it does not add to 300 for starters. Out of the 300 properties, at least over 200 properties, at least 100 of them have been transferred, and just about 200 of them are the subject of either the backlog or of legitimate queries. So in that regard, I think we have made significant progress. Regarding mineral rights and royalties, we are trying to set up a meeting with the Treasury Department because of the Royalty Act, because with the Royalty Act, institutions like those which are owned by people in rural areas will lose royalties because they will be paid to the state, and maybe the question of distribution may not be the best at this stage. So our view is just to ask for exemption so that we continue receiving, among others, royalties on behalf of the people where Ngonyama Trust operates. The financial performance chairperson speaks for itself at this stage. I believe that we can do better than we are doing if we improve the capacity and employ more staff. It would be noted, just to mention, chairperson, that in the previous years, they are still consistent with the current financial year under discussion. It would be noted that the transfer payment from the department only constitute about a round figure of 23% of the revenue of Ngonyama Trust, and the rest is self-generated by Ngonyama Trust. You note that the transfer from the department, in other words, what is appropriated by Parliament, is just over 3 million rand, and what Ngonyama Trust itself generates is in the tune of about 50 million rand. We believe, Chairperson, maybe that that is how far one can go as far as that slide is concerned. Likewise, with the disbursement of funds, although we express a concern there, but one, we believe the monies are secured. Number two, we realize from past experiences that to disperse funds for the sake of meeting targets has not proved to be beneficial to communities because, one, communities are still challenged in terms of designing appropriate business projects, two, in terms of managing those businesses properly. We had at one stage where we disbursed significant funds where we were advised that a bursary scheme was created in a particular community. But when we did an investigation, we discovered that the bursary fund was used for bursaries for people who wanted to undergo computer training for 3 months, and then thereafter people still remained where they were. We felt that that could have been used better. Now, coming back to the Auditor General's basis for qualification and comments, Chairperson, our report speaks for itself, but I just want to make a general comment because we take these comments seriously and we always work on them to improve our future performance. And we want just to explain why we will hopefully continue being so qualified for purposes of this. One thing is, when we talk about valuation of land holdings, I think the gentleman from Auditor General's office has made it very clear that it is because of the system that is required or standard required. I understood him to be referring to GRAP. That is what is required, that we should evaluate land. It would be noted from our comment there that if we were to use the funds that we have, it would cost us over 50 million rand to evaluate Ngonyama Trust. We are not in defiance of evaluating land. We believe with the municipalities now being required to do valuation for all land across the country, that hopefully we may have a discussion with the Auditor General whether a municipal valuation, for which we shall not have paid, but for which municipalities shall have paid because it wants revenue, whether that would be acceptable. But as things currently stand, for Ngonyama Trust to go and spend 100% of its revenue to evaluate land only for the purposes of meeting this GRAP standard, while it is laudable, we believe that we would be disadvantaging communities a fair amount of resource. That is just the comment that we are making. We are not saying the Auditor General is wrong. We take that in kindness. We understand where they are coming from. But we just want to keep that as the basis of maybe a point of departure. Again, with regards to issue of incompleteness of royalties, again, we understand that, but like they said, the standard has been pitched, such that what this means for us to meet this requirement, this is what it means. We must employ a person to sit in each and every mine and count every tonnage of mineral resources that are being extracted. Only then can we meet this requirement. And for that reason, we understand very well when the Auditor General says to us that the information for purposes of that is incomplete and therefore it cannot vouch for that. We just wanted to make that explanation and emphasize that that is where the point of departure would be. We don't ask for one small leniency for them, as long as that understanding is there, that if, for instance, the state, like I know the state also is in the same problem maybe in some areas, were to allow somebody, for instance, to extract sand on the river, what it means by accounting standard is that you must have somebody sitting down around the river every day the sand is extracted to count how many tonnage is being removed from that river. Other than that, you would be qualified for the revenue you derive from that sand, because you cannot be sure whether the person who's paying you royalties has taken 100 tons, but he paid you for 80 tons. It's the same thing with royalties. We are being told that these mining houses, which operate on Ngoyama Trust land, may be underpaying us or maybe overpaying us, but because we don't have the mechanism to be there, what it means, we cannot vouch for that, and so neither can the Auditor General. That is how we understand them to be saying. Just one small correction with regards to rates in the next slide. We are not the defendants in respect of rates charged by Etewini Municipality. The case currently as it stands is not that Etewini Municipality is now saying we are on rates. In terms of Intergovernmental Relations Act, organs of state must first try and resolve their dispute, whatever they may be, through facilitation. If that fails, then they must take the matter, depending what the minister responsible says, to court if it does not find a political solution. So at this stage with the Tewini, the municipality, all it wants is for the court to decide whether the land which they claim we owe them rate on is rateable or not. They don't have a figure. They're not claiming any figure. If the court says, yes, we are rateable, it does not mean, therefore, pay 100 rand. It means go, therefore, and calculate and come to me. That is essentially what the case is about at this stage. I know it's coming in before court on the 22nd of December, but that is how we understand it. It has passed through all these facilitations. For the purposes of this record, because it has come now to the National Archives, let me explain this further. Ngoyama Trust's position is that it is not owing for one of the reasons I've already said was part of the land we are said to be on rates on is state domestic. It belongs to various government departments but remains on Ngoyama land because the relevant department has not taken transfer. Part of the land is the townships which by law we've been transferring to them, and the process has been slow. So at the end of the day, if anybody listened to the history that I've been giving, we own land where you've got over 4.5 million people living on it. How on earth could have the state created one organ of state just to pay rates on behalf of so many people? Which is that land, if you begin to reason, which is that land which Ngoyama Trust must pay rates for? All I'm saying is that because this has been part of the records for at least 10 years now, I think this committee must begin to understand that the position we hold so strongly has merit. Because the first time we appeared here, we were told we were owing 30 million. by a given municipality. No doubt, no municipality would wait for 10 years to collect money. I'm here today, 9 years later. I maintain the same position, that we believe our case is a strong one. We understand our operations better than anybody else because, like I'm saying, we're owning land as trustees on behalf of the people. The net effect of any case that could go may well be that those people have been shielded by Ngonyama Trust. If at all the land is rateable, it would be the people on the ground that must pay rate and not Ngonyama Trust. We can only be held liable for rates, in our view, for land that we own, which is unoccupied. That is as simple as that. I think Chairperson, that, in my respectful opinion, deals significantly with our report, and I wish, therefore, at this stage, Chairperson, to request that, unless there was a question coming later on, that I pass over the other presentation, because the rest that remains talks about, I've dealt with rates, the human resources is work in progress. Illegal occupation is work in progress, not only for Ngonyama, but for the government at large. Unless there is a uniform system of dealing with land invasion, we all cry alike, government, municipalities, Ngonyama Trust. I've dealt with the issue of royalties, and consequently, I've also dealt with matters of emphasis and contingent liability. That, to me, Chairperson, concludes our presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Judge. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, you would note how patient we are today. We want to make sure that we do justice to this report so that when we go to the House, we are unanimous on the findings of the committee and not misread the findings of the Auditor General or the presentation of Ngonyama Trust. This is the time we have allocated for questions, but we will not restrict the period to questions only. If you have questions, you have comments, or you whatever statement you want to make, you are allowed to do so. Honourable member.
Thank you, Kate. Firstly, on the material losses of 53 million rand, I would like the department to assist the committee with the following information. Firstly, there are three land reform projects in KwaZulu-Natal where there were fictitious beneficiaries, duplication of payments, and then the registration of the fictitious beneficiaries. Is there a possibility that we can be provided? Well, firstly, has any arrest been made? Secondly, what is the chances of recovering and transferring to the right beneficiaries? Then can the department also provide us with an extensive summary of a statement of the status of the 32 current investigations, the expected time of completion, prospects of recovering losses? That would also really assist. And then when will we get a time where we can have a forensic audit throughout all the departments? Because, you know, you keep on hearing about farms that is the farmer is selling for 4,000 rand a hectare, but agreements are saying 50,000 rand a hectare. We've heard it in the other committee that I'm serving in, and it's a continuous problem. Then, on the Ngonyama Trust, I would like to ask the question of how is the community actually benefiting from Ngonyama Trust? You know, when you're traveling and you're driving, and I'm talking, let's take the Okushlambe area, let's take the Burpple area, you are traveling for kilometers and kilometers, and all you see is nothing. Nothing and poverty. That is all you see. But this is where you get to the question of saying, given the time in the history of the country that this act was assented to, what was the actual purpose? And does the act still serve its purpose? Now, then the 200, if I refer to the report, page 16, the 200 million rand development in Jazini, I'd like to ask the question, is there any communities been relocated? Who is the investors? Is it local investors? Is it investors from abroad, possibly from Dubai? also want to find out the terms of lease. Is it short-term leases? Is it 99-year leases? Then I'm coming to a point where, I don't know, Chairperson, if you're going to be very, very impressed with me, but it's a burning issue. I want to know what has happened to the multi-billion rand project that was proposed by the Dubai-based property developer in the Mandini, Makambini area. That was a deal with Ruwa Trading that would lead to the eviction of 10,000 families, 300 churches, 29 schools, 3 clinics. Or should we say it was the forced removal of 50,000 individuals. The 16,500 hectares of communal land, that was not the only challenges. We were talking about, for example, if we look at the culture of our people, we're talking about graves being demolished, being dug up. And you know, I want to know, because this has gone very, very quiet. I mean, I also would like to know whether Nkosi Mataba and Chris Wilkin was actually present when they went to Dubai. Because as far as I can understand, although they went on the trip to Dubai, they have never they've never sat into any meetings when there was a deal negotiated to sell that for $1. For $1. So I really think that we need the answer from this today, Chair. That's the company. Thanks, Chair.
Deputy Minister, on saying African sex on your face. Yes, you stay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a long list of questions, but I don't even think I'm going to ask the questions, Chair. This department's got a long history of not reaching their targets. We sit here year after year after year listening to the same story. I think we're at the point now that we need to say this is now the end. Because I was listening to the chairperson of the Ingonyama Trust Board, and I understand I'm not trying to be difficult by saying we don't understand your problems. We understand it. But it's very nice to say on the one hand that you're busy in a court case with the municipality because you don't have a lease. But on the other hand, you expect the people that you say the trust represents to pay that money themselves. But, you know, you were telling us that you are acting on behalf of the people because they cannot act on their own behalf or they can't make their own business deals. So, you know, when it suits you, it's great to work on behalf of the people, but when it doesn't suit you on the other hand, you know, you say you can't do this thing. So we must come to a point where we either say we're moving forward or we're standing where we are, or we're saying now the state must take the land and control it themselves or give it to the people to do it themselves. But we can't come year on and year on with the same stories. It then brings me to the next point where I would actually say, I'm not scared to say that I was quoted in the press that I said this department is in total chaos. And I will say it here today, and I believe that. And I will tell you why I say that. The fact that the two biggest programs, which is 4 and 5, could not even be audited. Because there is no supporting documents. There is nothing. This department is so open to fraud. And we are seeing it now coming out into these investigations going on. The minister has told me, we know about it, that 2 weeks ago he sent some officials from his department to investigate a farm sale, where the farmer has asked 4,700 rand a hectare, and on the contract it says 35,000 rand a hectare. This is not new. This is going on because it's so open for fraud. Chairperson, I would really want us to take a decision here today where we say this whole department must be investigated by the Auditor General or by the Special Investigations Unit or by someone, because it cannot continue like this. There is no controls in place, there is no risk management, there is no nothing. There is no supporting documents. So I've also heard, and I've asked the question to the Minister, how many department officials have benefited out of the land reform program. I'm not saying someone is not supposed to benefit, but I got an answer back to say that two have benefited. I've been told that in Limpopo alone, more than six people benefited. So how can we get an answer back from the Minister, say two people? But I was told that, you know, the other people benefited. I can tell you why, because we've been told that there is no list of beneficiaries. So if there's no list of beneficiaries, everyone can benefit, and no one will know about it. This must end, Chairperson. I will not even ask the thousands of questions that I have, because the answers that we get is not correct.
I'm happy you stopped. Your temperature has been going up. Honourable Tapan.
Honourable Chair, my first question, I don't know whether it goes to the Auditor General or to the department. It's based on the findings that there's 3,301,000 losses. So what I want to find out now is what is happening to these cases. I don't know, that is why I'm saying, I don't know whether it goes to Auditor General or to the department. And secondly, my second question, it goes to their recommendations. I want to find out, when did they make this recommendation to the department? That is improvement of internal control. When did they make that recommendation? And then my other question, Honourable Chairperson. All right, to the Auditor General again, where they say there is, the land is not valuable.
Excuse me, Honourable Ntapa.
Thank you.
Go back to your original question on internal control. Complete your question. The internal control question.
My question, Honourable Chair.
For purposes of Auditor General knowing which part to answer, if they said yesterday, then it's not complete what you're looking for.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Under recommendation, improvement of internal control to prevent and detect irregularities. That is the one Honourable Chair. I'm asking, when did they make that recommendation to the department? And then another question, Honourable Chair, goes also to Auditor General. They say there is the land is not being valued by the Ngonyama Trust. And then the presenter of Ngonyama Trust says this might cause the loss, I'm sorry, the amount that could be used in evaluating the land. So what I want to find out now from the Auditor General is, what impact does this have of the land not being valued, so that you can weigh the impact against the loss, against the amount, the cost of the evaluating. I think that is clear. Thank you, Honourable Chair. And then another question, Honourable Chair, is about the decrease in the royalties. I didn't get clearly the reason of this from 14.3 million to 3.4 million. I didn't get it clearly. So I would love the President of the Environment Trust to clarify this decrease. Sorry, Honourable Chair. Thank take, Honorable Chair, Ms. Peace, other question. But another question, Honorable Chair, is what was raised by the colleague, Honorable Member, who put the question first. I missed the name of the Honorable Member.
Honorable Carter.
That question, I wrote that question, how are the people benefiting? That question is very important to me as well. That is all, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
You would ask a question in relation to whether more than about the 103 traditional councils have the money for the community.
What I want to find out, Honorable Chairperson, is to say that you are taking the money to traditional councils. What I want to find out personally is how do the people benefit? They transfer the money to traditional councils, of which some of them have not yet collected that fund. How do the people benefit from those traditional councils? What is being done by that money by to benefit the communities?
Even the traditional councils have to qualify first before they can get the money.
Honorable Chairperson, that is it.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question would be directed to the Ngonyama Trust. I understand in some years back the way the development was registered was when a community needed to build a school or applied from development health for a clinic or a police station, so to say. There used to be a form that was filled and finished to the regional authorities where then they could be taken up to the former local government for the PTOs. As the chairperson has been saying, the deputy chairperson of the board, or the acting chairperson of the board has been saying, there are no proper records for those pockets of land in rural areas which is regarded as state land that can be sort of direct to the state for whatever reasons with regards to the valuation. What actually happened? Did the board not made a follow-up on finding out on those PDOs from the former local government so that there could be a proper register for all those pockets of properties that are there in rural communities which are now regarded as part of the property of the state? Secondly, in the oral just presentation, he did mention the certain leadership being part of the board. And my question would be, in some years back, when the Ngonyama Trust was put into place, there were representatives for the provincial house to the board. Currently, in the list of the members of the board, there is no traditional leader that appears to be representing the provincial house. What happened? Was there any change in the law that says no more traditional leader representing the house in the Ngonyama Trust board? And again, there was a mention was made with regards to the non-compliant with the regulatory and reporting requirements for the Department of the Auditor General Department. And my question would be, how then is this entity going to make sure that in future it has and maintains an effective, efficient, and transparent system as required in terms of Section 51.1A, Romans 1 of the PFMA? I wonder that if my questions are sort of clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. When Jack Ngwenya put his presentation, he mentioned that the Ngonyama land was known as agricultural land. But when we get there, only find that it is overpopulated by people. But what the Ngonyama Trust Board is doing to to because let me say we have a lot of land which is good for cultivation, but it's just lying now. We'll find that trees and nothing is happening on that land. What is the board is doing to assist to bring back that culture which people used to do when we're still young, we're plowing that land more than anything, but now when we're getting there, it's just embarrassing. And on your document, that is the annual report, I need some clarity on a few things there. On page 46, there is a budget for fire breaks expenditure. When you get there in the rural area, we will find that the people are burning land, fire anytime during the night, but I didn't know that there's a provision like this one. Are the people know that they have this provision on your budget so that they can prevent these fires in the area? Okay. Another one is staff recruitment. You mentioned a budget of 24.759. Staff recruitment, I don't know what is this for, what do you mean about this? Can you give me clarity maybe? Lastly, you have a provision for a Zulu History Project, which is 194.542. And what are you doing about that project? Is any project, how many, if you we are doing something for this Zulu History Project? Thank you.
Slide 11. Kunale Pathiti, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Mhlambe sihlalo angazi noma ngiqondise kwi-department noma ngiqondise kwi-auditor general ukuthi kule mali engaka i-wasteful expenditure ngabe kwenzakaleni ngale mali, ngoba ngokucabanga kwami eze i-committee le-rural development siyayinida imali yokuthi emakhaya kufanele abantu bathele, ngoba kahle kahle abantu basemakhaya labo sebeyavila sabasathanda ukulima, ngoba akazi ukuthi umsebenzi wokulima ukulima kungabasiza ngani. Sebekholelwe kuthina bafuna ukuxhasa besebenze njengabanye abantu, kodwa thina sikholelwe kutheni umhlaba awubuyele ebantwini, abantu bawusebenze njengabantu abasikhule nathi ngakho okuvela emhlabathini. Mhlambe-ke singake sithole incazelo ngale mali, i-3324, I don't know what percent ngaphambili, ozongichazisela uzoyicela ukuthi uyichaze kahle shephesini ngoba uyayibona na ku-slice 11. So ukuthi ake bechaze, singake le mali ilahlekile, idliwa amafluthi, angazi bekwenze njani, ngoba phela imali le fanele ngabe kwenziwa ukuthenwa abantu ngamagrupu ngamagrupu, bakwazi ukuyuza umhlaba, batshelwe ukuthi uma belima kulo mhlaba yini abazoyizuza ngokuthenwa, ukuba beyisebenzisele ukuthena nje abantu basemakhaya bakithi ukuthi baqonde kahle manje, ngoba abanye bakhula nje abaqondi kahle ukuthi ukulima kuyanceda ngempela, yibona okwenza ukuthi umhlaba erishi.
Two related questions. flowing from what you said was the pending case between the board and the Itakwini spirit. In the olden days, there was a 99-year lease owed for our 293 townships. Everybody in the whole of the Republic understood that you don't own the land on which the house stands, because the land belongs to the white South African. And as a black person having this lease that is 99 years, you can only make the house beautiful or even a little bit bigger, but you can do nothing about the land. There was no question of rates then. The issue was that you pay rent to the relevant black authority on which the your house stands for the lease of the land. I do not quite understand your logic in your argument on this lease between Ingonyama Trust and the state domestic institution in your case against Itakwini spirit. I'm not sure whether you are using the same act in the books, in the statute books, or in a different act altogether. Because your black local authorities at that time were trustees on behalf of the national government of the Republic. They were actually employees. So one was not paying rate to another one because of the law that governs leases. In this case, the institutions are meant to lease. Maybe they don't pay. Public Works is not responsive to you, but they don't own, because you said there's no transfer, there's no legal document that transfers the land to those institutions or Public Works. So the rates are owed to the municipality by the owner of the land. I just want to understand your logic, because you see, your passion with which you raised the point was more of the relationship issue, was not the legal issue. I want you to deal with the legal question. Related to that, you raised the issue about the value of the land, not only that on which these properties are, but also the rest of the land on which Ingonyama Trust has been made trustee of, or Ingonyama himself. Now you have a surplus in this financial year. I didn't see previously year whether you had a surplus. I'm reading from page 14 on your Auditor General slide. It's Ingonyama Trust itself, page 14. You have a surplus of 10.5 million. The valuation, as far as I understand, it has to be you survey and then you value. So we were told by yourself last year that you valued 1,600, it was 16,000 or 1,600 properties.
Not valued, but we said those are transfers, those are
times. You did not value, you surveyed.
No.
So no part of the land that you control is surveyed.
There is substantial part of it, but what I'm saying is the figures you're referring to not be 1,600 that we are talking about, I think we say of the 2.7 million taxpayers.
Excuse me, sir. I think what we are saying there.
I'm grateful to you. I do not want to lose my issue.
Oh, yes, no, okay.
The figure will be wrong.
Yes.
But the principal issue I'm raising is that you say you cannot value because the cost of valuing the land would be 50 million. Now, my own understanding is that valuation process does not take 1 year, does not take one financial year. It's a matter that can go over time. Now, you have been holding on to this land since 1994, although you said last year surveying took longer than you expected. So we accept that. After you finished surveying, you did not start valuing because of the cost. But valuing takes time. So that I don't understand in which part of the act that created the trust, which will allow you to be acting illegally to a point where you say the cost of doing it is more important to us than complying with the law because it's too much to do. You are prepared to wait for municipalities to do it. I do not understand. Maybe you can explain to us. Those are the two questions I have to answer.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe
it may be that my last question was directed at yourself, but both of you, also the general and yourselves, could answer the question. If you choose to go first, that's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. It seems that the Auditor General wants to start first. Thanks, Honourable Chair, and thanks for the opportunity to go first on this. I think we need to perhaps just step back as it relates to a couple of the questions that affect the Auditor General. I'm always amazed when people claim that the standards bring certain things about. But it's not actually practical circumstances that bring it about. There's no situation where standards get written, accounting standards or audit standards get written, where it's not written for a reason. It's not some academic that goes sit down and just haphazardly create additional hurdles to jump over. So there's a reason for it. I think we need to think about that reason. I think the question came up somewhere along the line around valuation. Why is it important to value land? And not just over that one rand. And I think actually the question was hidden in some of the questions. If we talk about a dispute about rates is based on the value of land. If you know what your land is worth, you stand much stronger in that debate. If you talk about the situation of land being sold, the allegation that was raised, I think, right at the beginning of the question period, again, if you get to a situation of having to sell or interact or transfer any land, surely you need to know what's the value of it. Otherwise, you may find yourself in a situation where there's an inappropriate transaction. So there's definitely value in, this is going to sound strange, there's value in valuing a land. There's sense in doing it. As to the cost benefit, well, I can't obviously comment on the fact that there's a price tag of 50 million rands linked to a valuation process. Again, I think that's something that needs to be explored. I think what was positive in the comment is the fact that there is the possibility of, instead of doing a direct exercise, to perhaps to latch on to what certain municipalities need to do. There should be ways around that. So in my mind, the principle is there's a reason why we need to do it. There's a very good business, practical reason why we need to do it. We just need to explore the best way to do it. If I can go back on my own words in terms of the standards, one thing that the standard does not say is that rules get outweighed by cost-benefit analysis. There's rules for a reason, and we need to find the best and appropriate way to deal with it. And perhaps discussions should focus on what's that best alternative to value of the land. Perhaps I should stop there and not respond to the rest of the questions if there's a chance to, from the other side, to also deal with that specific issue.
Chair, I think before we hand over,
thank you, Chair. I wanted to avoid the point we are reaching now, Chair. But regrettably,
one is driven to it. You would note that this is a recent development from the Auditor General, the question of valuing land. We don't dispute that there is value in land because we do a number of transactions. If you go back 7 years or 8 years back, you will notice that in our financials, we did put value. We said it was 300 rand per hectare. Then we got qualified because we were asked what was the basis of that by the Auditor General. We responded, we told them that because we did not buy the land, this is our assumed value. They said, no, we shouldn't do it that way. We then asked what was the best way, seeing that our mother department, Land Affairs at the time, did not put value. Why don't we have to adopt the same standard? They said, by all means, do so. We did that. They qualified us. Then we said, on your own advice, you are castigating us. What else must we do? So that is where we are coming from with this history. I remember the time when we had to debate that Mr. Terence Numbembe had just taken over the office when we questioned why did we have to take your advice in good faith and yet you continue qualifying us. Hence, it has now changed. It's no longer the question of saying you did not put value on land. It's raised higher. It says you did not value your land. In other words, you cannot simply take any valuation, whether it's a municipality one or not. It says you did not value your land. So it's not a question, Chair, that we are saying we must flout the law. Because I'm not aware, even in the Auditor General's own report, where they point out a specific legislation which says we must value the land. There is a difference between valuing the land and putting value on land. That's where they must come out clear. What are they saying there? Do they want us to value the land or do they want us to put value? Because we can put value. We have done so before. But we've been trying as best as possible to meet the standard, but it keeps on shifting. Again, to go back as well to explain what the chairperson has said about the lease and the value and the survey. This is where the problem arises, chairperson, because fortunately we're sitting with lawmakers here. We have to explain to them the law they make, what are its consequences. You are correct to say there was no rating liability on this land we're talking about. But the reason is not because there was a lease or not a lease. Past dispensation did not put rate on black land in homelands. There was no rate liability. Not because it was always under lease. In some instances, there was no lease. In some instances, like the township, there was what is called a deed of grant, which was almost as good as your freehold. The state did not even take leases or what. The state would just build. That's why it has got no document. The basis of rates, chairperson, come from one in KZN. There is the ordinance of 1974, which applied in what was then called Natal. Our argument is that as soon as the former KwaZulu homeland and Natal came into one, there is no legal basis why you would extend the law that applied to the Natal to KwaZulu where there was no rate act. The parliament, in trying to solve this problem, has created even a more complication by the Municipal Property Rates Act. Because the Municipal Property Rates Act of 2004 has extended the rate base to everybody in the country, something that never happened before. That is where the problems are, as far as the question of rating the owner. Yes, under the old ordinances in the whole country, you could rate only the property owner, but not in the former homeland. So we say, one, this property was not subject to rate, insofar as it contains the rate, up to a point where the Municipal Property Rate Act applied. Two, we say there was an act called the Rating of State Property Act, which operated until July 2005. All state property was not rated, not because the state was not the owner, but because it protected itself by creating an instrument to say you cannot rate state property. As soon as that property went through the window, the Municipal Property Rate Act came into operation, and hence the state is now rateable. That's where the problem lies. But the sad thing with the present Municipal Property Rate Act, it does not only rate the owner, it rates people other than owners as well. That is the present act we're talking about. So that is the reality. I do not, Chairperson, unless you ask me to, intend going to as much details as that. Because the municipality does not rate you on the basis of how did you rate your property. It sends a valuer and tell you that you have rated your property according to our rating. This is the rate of your property. It doesn't say, you didn't rate your property, then you are in trouble. Irrespective of what you rated your property to be, that does not, it can only be relevant when you object and you say, maybe I need an independent valuer. That's the only time. So in this context we are in, yes, you may see it because KwaZulu-Natal happened to have Ingonyama Trust. But I foresee an even far more complication once the Property Rate Act, because those are the problems which is now operational, we are going to face with the department itself in other provinces. Because you may find that what we have done over the years, the department is as yet to begin doing that. So, to the extent that I'm responding to the question of valuing the property and rent, my answer is I'm as yet now to find a good answer. Hence, I was saying in my presentation, I hope our office will engage the office of the AG to find out whether they will accept the municipal rates, municipal rating. Because if there is an act which says we must value our property, at least this is a good forum today, because the Auditor General will tell us that this act says you must rate your property, because we could have put value in various ways like we did before. They can go back to our books and tell us why did they not accept that in the first instance, because had they accepted the 300 rand per hectare we put from the time we started, this issue would have been put to rest then. They said, no, that's not acceptable. But we said, you are applying double standard, because land affairs does not raise his property, but you don't qualify them on the same basis as you qualify us. And this is our mother department. Maybe, Chairperson, that's where we need maybe a discussion even beyond today's discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Judge. Let us agree that neither parties today would be regarded as correct until two things have happened. One, that you submit your submissions in writing, and that we do what you're requesting to do, engage with the department so that we have a finality reached between the department and the Auditor General on this matter. From this point onwards, we will have then a standard, plus backed by the law, that says this is how things will be done. Because if we arbitrarily say that today, the basis may be wrong. Thank you very much. Can we move on to the other questions unrelated to value, surveying, and so on? Most prominently would be the fraud case or fraud cases. Then we'll follow with the benefits to the people.
Chair, it would appear that, that it's up
General,
to us to stop the...
For privilege. The department is listening today only because they are debating tomorrow with us. So it will be advisable to our DM to make sure that some of these questions which will arise tomorrow on you or directed at you would have plausible answers provided. Thanks.
Thanks, Chief. The fraud case, probably from our point of view, is something that's relatively easy to deal with. Now, I know Macy will probably want to add on to that. When it gets to what has been done about the fraud, now that's action. That's something that I'm not prepared to comment on. I think that is indeed for the department to deal with it. I think the more relevant question that we do need to deal with is the question that got asked around when did we make sure that these internal controls were raised and brought to the attention of the department. And perhaps again we need to take that step back and say, well, that would talk about the reactive portion from the Auditor General. And it would ignore the fact that the PFMA up front gives very specific instruction, a specific rule, if you like, to the accounting office to institute specific internal controls that regulate the business that's at hand. So it's first of all a responsibility that's allocated to the department to bring that in place, regardless of whether the Auditor General reminds them about the situation or at certain points because things go wrong, actually need to highlight that. If we talk about when we would interact on that, I think the answer would be very simple and would say each and every audit. Our audit process is of such a nature that it is first of all risk-based and it's based on the context of the specific department. Now if I would go to Land Affairs, the one area that would be the most risky would be the internal controls around the transfer of land and the flow of money that relates to it. If that is the starting point, if we all say that that's the essence of a department, that's got to be rated as both the context and probably the most risky area that I as auditor would need to deal with. So in my interacting with the department, whether I'm signing off on my audit plan up front, whether I'm executing or whether I'm reporting, I think that would always be a highlight. It may be that because of specific transactions or specific circumstances in here, there's more emphasis on that, especially in the report, but I think it would always be a matter of discussion that's on the table. So that discussion would have been there on a continuous basis. Every audit is a principle that's underpinning any audit. It would always been there. Macy, would you want to add on?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, through you. I think specifically what we would do, before we start the audit, we issue an engagement letter to the department. We discuss this engagement letter with the department, and that is where we emphasize on the responsibility of fraud and error and the risk that they should attend to or address. And also when we present the audit plan before we execute the audit, we then highlight the risks and what the department should then address. And throughout the audit, as we pick up exceptions and findings, we would communicate this to the department. So this has been happening throughout. And I just want to move on to the next question that's related to the royalties, and I just want to highlight an error in our presentation. We said that the royalties decreased by 3 million. In terms of the qualification, what actually the royalties increased by 3 million, but we could not verify the 3 million, so we are qualifying on the 3 million, but we could not verify the completeness and over and above the 3 million. I hope we put it into perspective. The question was to Ngonyama as to the reasons why there was a decrease in royalties. So I'm just saying it's an error on the presentation. We said it's a decrease, it's not a decrease, it's an increase. In terms of the qualification, we could not verify the 3 million, and that's what we are qualifying in Ngonyama on. We do not know the source of the 3 million. We could not express an opinion on the 3 million. Previous year, it was 14 million. Current year is 16 million. in our presentation we said it decreased, which means it would have been 3 million, but that's an error. It increased by 3 million, but then if you go to the audit report, we say we could not verify completeness of 3.4 million. So that the 3.4 million that included in the 16, the total of the 16 million, we could not verify that. We could not verify completeness of that, which means the rest of the balance, if you take 16 million minus 3.4 million, that we could verify. But the 3.4 million, we could not verify its completeness. There might be more. Yes, that's all the source of.
Very good that you collected 3.4 million more. Where is it from? I don't know.
Where is it from? And is there could be more? How do I know that it shouldn't be, the 3.4 million shouldn't be 10 million?
Thank you, Chair. I'm sure the fraud part I'm not related to. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Look, I did detect, Chairperson, maybe if I may start with the correction that has been made, that my understanding of that one, there might have been a typo error, because what we heard in our books is that the previous year it was 14,378,571 rand, and in the current financial year under discussion it is 16,675,189. The difference is 2,296,618. But what we understand the Auditor General to be saying is not that they couldn't verify the source. What they couldn't verify is all the systems in place that we were, like the lady put it, we were supposed to collect that amount, which is 3 million and odd. We could not, that one could not be vouched for to say all of it. But we know where it's coming from. The only thing is, were we supposed to get that amount or were we supposed to get more or less? That's their comment. It's known, the source is known, but the actual system, like I think the gentleman who presented earlier said, it was not reliable, there were no checks and balances. So with that one, we can live with that qualification. We thought it was an error to the extent that it says a decrease, but we understand what they're saying. But Chairperson, maybe if we can be given the liberty maybe to respond to some of the questions. I think one passing comment that has been, or rather a rhetorical question has been asked, whether the Ngonyama Trust Act still served the purpose which it was meant to serve. That question cannot be answered by us. We leave it to the lawmakers. From our side, what we can say is, if one responds to the benefit to the communities, there is a host of them. Maybe this becomes clear when I respond to the questions as raised. Oh, yes. You mean about?
He said we want the meeting of the mind now.
Yes, oh, okay.
The general said that this is what we qualified the Ngonyama Trust on, and and you are providing an answer which is not complete. And I thought that because it's dealing with a system that will make your figure reliable.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the issue of the royalty income, what we must make clear is that all royalty income that was supposed to be received or was received and received and deposited. It's not an issue that the money went missing. We've got to have that clear. What the auditor general is saying here is that in terms of audit practice, we are required to request for royalty audit certificates as a third party confirmation that the royalty income that we received is complete. In terms of our processes and procedures, we received royalty income for about, if our total income was 16, we would have received for about 13 million. We haven't received royalty audit certificates for about 3 million rand. We're reviewing our lease processes, and we would compel the mining operators to provide us with royalty audit certificates, which should solve the problem in future years. That's one. Also, we've got to take into account the Royalty Act, which is saying that the income from royalties would accrue to the state. We're working with that, and we would meet with the Treasury to make sure that, or convince Treasury that the money should be coming to us. In terms of the valuing of the land, as the acting chairperson said and stated very clearly, that it's not our intention to defy any act or any GRAP standard. Remember, GRAP standard was only applied to us recently as a whole. Before that, it was GARP and then IA standards. But what we're saying is that we also got to look at what is the purpose of us valuing this land. Is there any purpose in that? Despite having looked at the GRAP Act itself, what is going to happen to the land in the future? Why should we be spending this amount of money and not knowing what is going to happen to the land in the future? Is it going to go to beneficiaries? Is there any benefit in actually valuing the land? In terms of the other questions raised, we made clear that there's no decrease in royalties. There was an increase in royalties. That was an error on the part of the AG's office.
The more you speak, the more you put yourself in the trouble. I'm happy that you speak your mind here. It helps us too. But I'm worried about one little case which you're leaving out. I don't know whether it's deliberate or not. SOE. All of them comply to the same rules that the mother body complies. And the system, in my understanding, for the department, whether it's the Department of Land and Agriculture, but it was Land and Agriculture initially, isn't it? The department that comes to the visa and others, Land Affairs, their standards, we're applying the same way that they were running. I suggest you are suggesting not in your case.
I'm saying that we have to comply with that in terms of what the current status is.
I don't understand.
See, currently we go to comply with that.
I'm suggesting that the department was not shifted from GAP to another. And left you behind. Is that the case?
No.
But your insistence on the point makes it appear to be that you were exempted until recently.
No, what I'm saying is the full compliance of GRAP, we had to fully comply with GRAP in 2010. Prior to that, there was partial compliance with GRAP.
The Oz or Treasure.
I think that was the director from Treasury.
I see. Okay. You may complete.
In terms of the fire breaks expenditure, the honourable member suggested that it was a budgeted figure. These are all actual figures that we spent. Same with the staff recruitment fee. That was the actual amount that was spent, and that was for the service provider that we appointed to administer our recruitment of our additional staff. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. No, thank you, Chair. I think, Chairperson, it's possible that to some people, benefit would mean how much money are you giving to what community. And if the understanding is that benefit to the community means giving community money, our view is slightly different. We go beyond that. But maybe let me start by saying that those communities that would qualify for, say, a financial benefit are the communities where there are commercial activities taking place on their land and the money is paid to the Ingonyama Trust. And in return, the board will then make money available to them. But when I say the benefit to the community is broader than that, Chairperson, I mean, for instance, I understood the earlier question came from Honorable Carter, because that can illustrate exactly what we mean. I think that's where the question initially came from. And she asked specifically on page 16 whether there are people who relocated in the area, and if so, how many, etc., etc. Let us make the point clear here, Chairperson, that one, the kind of benefits that we make to the communities are in a number of layers other than money. One, we encourage communities to set up community trusts as a conduit through which they would receive whatever funds that come to them. We also provide training for those communities so that they are able to manage their trust, because our experience, most communities are forced into legal entities which are foreign to them. They are not empowered to operate those entities, and as a result, we would not be surprised if one were to do an audit and find out that most communities who have been forced into trust, those trusts have never complied with the deed of trust. They've never met, they've never been elected. So what we do is part of community benefit is we provide that service. We also provide services, but where it needs be, we appoint professional team to help the community. Let me give, for instance, a simple example. In one instance, the previous department, of which was called DWAF, intended, had already put on a public platform an offer to dispose of forests which were on Ingonyama land, which the community understood them to be theirs, but for public tender. We appointed a team of not only lawyers,
but also business transaction advisors. The result of that was, one, the department was persuaded to call off the tender. It was prepared to enter into negotiation with the community to dispose of those forests to them. That process is still ongoing. The other exercise, Honorable Carter has asked about the multi-billion development and so on. If you look at, for instance, our slide, where we talk about the fact that we shall not alienate land without the consent of the relevant community. If it was not for Ingonyama Trust, we are not sure what would have happened with that development. Because whatever discussion took place, they took place on the assumption that the land is owned otherwise. It then transpired in the process that the land was registered in the name of Ingonyama Trust. The statistics that he was referring to was provided by us, that there was about 16,500 hectares the community would lose, it would lose its character, etc., etc., how many people would be affected. We made certain conditions ourselves to say we were not one, it's not Ingonyama Trust or its policy to dispose of land because we hold it in trust. So we were not going to sell that land. We wanted that to be made clear. Number two, we said we would provide professional advice around the community so that they could understand what negotiations they're entering into. And thirdly, we said we're not going to sign any document unless it's consistent with our policy in terms of how we dispose land. So, in a nutshell, we ended up being the people that were seen as anti-development when we said we're not going to sign any document pertaining to that development unless certain conditions were met. One being that there is no outright sale of land. Number two, there is no relocation of people, etc., etc. There are many of those conditions. So, that to us, we consider as a benefit to the community. In other words, we provide all this professional advice. Parliament, on regular basis, passes highly technical legislation, like now as we speak. Municipal Property Rights Act, I don't think, has been conveyed to all the people that it applies to them. The Mineral Resources Act, as we currently speak, applies to the very people. But if it is not for Ingonyama Trust, the royalties would directly go to the state already and not come back to the community. That is one of the discussions on behalf of the people on Ingonyama land who are involved with the Treasury Department on, to say these are the consequences of this act unless you give an exemption. But coming back now to the disbursement of funds, which may well be what is meant by how do people access this money. One, if one goes, if we can list all the projects, I think if people look at the previous years, you will notice that in each year we try and give one or two projects in the community. For instance, the reason why in our theme for the current year, we decided to expose one hotel at Jozini, which is owned by the local community through a trust at 20%. The developers are local private developers from Pongolo who own 60%. The other 20% is by the funder which funded the community, which is National Empowerment Fund. We say this in our report that is the first time they have invested in community. But if you ask who are the beneficiaries, is the whole traditional council and its members in the under the traditional council, which consists of over 2,500 people. Those are the shareholders of that. With regards to whether there was any relocation, no. There was no relocation of people. Why was there no relocation? It's because initially that property, we said this in our report, was held under a PTO. A PTO is not registered in the deeds office or in the magistrate office. So those documents, hence, they get lost somewhere. But in terms of the then laws, which Chairperson, you as lawmakers have now ultimately put the last stone in the Black Administration Act, a person who holds a commercial PTO was by law, and still remains so, required only to pay 48 rand per year to the state, nothing more. That was the law. We as Ngonyama Trust took a resolution to say this is counterproductive. We would object to giving our consent as long as we are going to perpetuate this 48 rand. And hence we introduced the lease system. You would therefore imagine that one, the lease has enabled the developers to put up a multi-million hotel, which is jointly owned, because that hotel is going to be paying rental to the Ngonyama Trust, which in turn is destined for the same community, which at the same time owns the operating company. Now, I think I can go on and on, but just to explain that each traditional council, when we have advised them that there is money sitting in trust for you, for us to comply with all the prescripts, including the PFMA, we ask for a business plan to that community. What are you going to do with this money? So many of the communities succeed in putting up business plans, some do not. But let me give you the example, Chairperson, because an example was made, for instance, of poverty that does not change in many areas. There are many reasons for that. Because Ngonyama Trust Board, like I said, one is not a development agency. It facilitates development. But number two, our experience has shown that in one instance where we gave four communities each 5 million rand, about 8 years ago, based on the business plan that they had. When we went on the ground, what did we discover? One was that they had appointed a consultant to prepare them business plan. This consultant, immediately they heard they were going to get so much, they charged them a percentage of the money they were going to get. So money is lost already. Number two, we discovered that they had professionals who were appointed now by them for boreholes, where in some instances they had put the whole infrastructure for boreholes only to find that there was no water in the end. In some areas, we discovered that they bought chicken feed before even the chicken arrived. This is no exaggeration. But what that highlighted to us was the lack of capacity on the ground for the people to manage money. Hence, we insist on this business plan, even if it's at a delay, because that money does not disappear. So, in a nutshell, Chairperson, to ourselves, community benefit is not only a question of money, but it's a question of many things, ensuring that there are skills in place, there are projects that are meaningful to communities. In some areas, you will find, you go there, you'll find that there are community art centers, there are community gardens. In some areas, like I say, there are high commercial value development. Thank you as far as that is concerned.
In relation to land lying fallow, the lady did answer, the CFO did answer the question about fire breaks, staff recruitment, but no answer to the Zulu history project and the land lying fallow.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think one of the issues we want to to highlight is we only act within the framework of the enabling legislation on Ngonyama Trust. For instance, let us relate to what Umdwana has raised about the land lying fallow and so on. that really lies outside our responsibility. It lies elsewhere, whether within the community itself, whether within the political system. Until recently, when there is now in KwaZulu-Natal for the first time a legislation that allows for proper planning on Ingonyama land, which is called KwaZulu-Natal Planning and Development Act, which came into operation in April this year. What was happening is municipalities did not insist on proper planning on Ingonyama land. In other words, what that means is land use, like the example I think Mdwana was referring to when I said the land is meant to be agriculture, is the following. Is that land as we currently see it, if you look, I think 99% of Ingonyama Trust land is still seen as agricultural land in terms of land use, whereas there are people there, because there was no municipality until then which had powers to do zoning. Now, what is then happening is it's up to the local community on the ground and the relevant municipalities to decide what is the best use of that land. We are not saying we cannot participate on that, but the issue of the land lying fallow is simply because the people's attitude towards work has changed over the years, or land use rather, has changed over the years. We would be, I have indicated, running with a staff at this stage of about 20. One, we can be seen as intruding, if not interfering, with the local structure whose job it is, in the first instance, to protect and ensure that land is put to best use. And for that reason, we are aware that these things are happening, and but there is nothing much from our side that we can do. Maybe that would be my comment as far as that is concerned. But there was another question raised that...
in the COVID that came the we came across quite a number of pieces of land that are lying fallow. Some of them land claimed from government or private sector. So you said your responsibility is not to do yourself, but facilitate development. You on slide number 4 indicating that your core business would be to manage for them for, I quote, material benefit and social well-being of the community. In that case, the land that Kumbana relates to the fact that you facilitate development of that land and other people claim that role, which you cannot pay for the may not necessarily lie fallow. I'm not talking about the whole area. I'm just talking about that which already have been developed, but because it was vacated by the previous owner, is now in the hands of the... There's a gap between the role of the Department of Agriculture and Land Reform, sorry, of Rural Development in case of that, and the national one, and it's for that benefit to arise. I'm inviting you to comment on that because you are saying because of your staffing complement you couldn't do more. But I'm suggesting as a facilitator, you can make others do what you cannot do.
We accept that observation, Chairperson, that we could do more. Chairperson, I think I'm not sure whether I could respond to all the questions that remain unanswered from our side. There was still a question about rate where I think the lady suggested that when it suits me, I say the people must pay the rates. When it suits me, I say we are not paying rates. So I think...
We've already decided
on. Oh, yes. Okay, thank you.
Of course, within the ambit of the issue, then we pay.
Thank you.
Let's deal with the new district project.
I think the Zulu History Project, which Mdwana is referred to, is the project that was is currently in place, but there was a specific amount which he has referred to, which was made available. That was the only project, because I think the question is how many of them are there. That was the only project, because there was a proposal, and if I may just explain what this project is about. Basically, is the fact that the available information about the Zulu history is one way or the other distorted or else incomplete, and then there is a historian that was appointed by the board to help in the writing of this project or that book, which we hoped was to be available by June this year, but the only outstanding item by now is that she needs now to interview the king, the present king, and then the project would be over. So it was a once-off project. No. Thank you, Chair. That relates to Zulu history. I'm not sure whether I should go beyond that to other questions. I was dealing with the Zulu history project.
No, I understand that, except for to eliminate any doubt.
In the context of? Yes, no, I understand what you're saying now, Chairperson. The context is in relation to the core business of the board being the administration and management of land and facilitation of development. The book was seen as ancillary. The writing of the book was seen as ancillary, especially with regards to land. To say the land that currently the board manages to date, where does it come from? How much of it still remains within historically the people who were the owners of that land? That is the only context. It's not part of the core business of the board, hence I'm saying it was a once-off project.
Thank you very much. I have noted there was a follow-up question that was raised, and the Honorable Carter wanted to make a follow-up unless you are indicating something else other than a follow-up. Or if you are happy now, I will not prod you to ask another question.
Okay, no, thank you. I must admit, from the Ngonyama Trust side, I felt that they were tap dancing. They were not getting down with the facts. I want to go back to the question I've asked directly, which was the 200 million rand in the Jusini development, who is the investors? It's straightforward. Then the question that I wanted to ask, because it's not easy to say, oh, we did this, and let's forget about CORE, that C-O-H-R-E that has done a lot of work and research and really pushed the issue to stop in the Makambini area. The question that I asked was, did Nkosi Mataba and Chris Wilkin from the Ngonyama Trust form part of a delegation that went to Dubai? So I just want a straightforward question, answer on that, please, Jay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I have said, Chairperson, with regards to who the investor is. I thought I'd explained that, but let me explain it again. The 60% investor are the local developers from Pongola. If the name is wanted, this is the Brechner Family Trust and Albert Lawrence Family Trust. They own hotel resources in Pongola. And the Albert Lawrence family itself is also owning some other commercial businesses in Devon. The other investor is the National Empowerment Fund, which has invested 20% to the project and also funded 20% of the community participation. So in total, I think the Albert Lawrence Family Trust and the Bressner Family Trust own 60% of the development. The NEF owns 20% and the community owns 20%. Those are the investors of the project. The leasehold is a 40-year lease, not a 99-year lease. After 40 years, these investors will, without compensation, shall have made enough money to exit the project, the ownership of which, because it's under this hold, will remain on Ingonyama Trust for the project. It will be up to those that will be still alive to decide whether they appoint the same operating company. As you could see, that the operating company is a private company. It's not the same investors. I think there is one aspect that I didn't pick up well, which now has been repeated, about whether Inkosi Mathaba and Chris Wilkins. It's not Chris Wilkins, that's why I got lost. It's Chris Aitken, who used to work for Ingonyama Trust. The question is, did they go to Dubai or not? And what happened? Yes, the answer is yes, they did go to Dubai. Maybe then let me elaborate what was the context of going to Dubai. When these possible development was then mooted, Ingonyama Trust was in the process with the local community and municipality to identify, as well as the province Department of Economic Development, to identify possible economic nodes in the area. So when the Dubai crowd came, they wanted more information about the land, which we provided. And the next thing is there was an invitation extended to me personally, as well as to Inkosi Mathaba, and to the district mayor and the local mayor. I wanted to know what was the invitation for. I was told it was the invitation for more information about land. I said, look, if that is the case, the person that has got all the technical information, I'm not full-time employed by the board, Mr. Chris Aitken is available. He can participate in that trip. Likewise, Inkosi Mathaba was invited. The report that I was given was that his visit to Dubai was more of a holiday because he was not invited to participate in the discussion about the development. Likewise, Mr. Aitken says, look, I was just given a nice trip around Dubai and then I came back. Whatever one can read between the lines there is up to anybody, but I was just satisfied from my side that we were not stopping any development. If any information was wanted, was there, and we insisted throughout as the board that whatever is wanted, we will want those things minuted. If that is what I did not respond fully to, I apologize for that, but from the Ingonyama Trust side, we never thought there's anything untoward that we did. And we're always prepared to cooperate, provided we act within the prescripts of the Alfinan Act.
And the providers of the holiday benefit are not involved in the current development, as you said.
Yes, Chair, there is no further development at this stage because our conditions stand. We have been made to understand that possibly that company, which was Ruad, is under liquidation because it's only a number of consultants that were appointed on risk, et cetera, but we are less concerned about that.
Hi, I'm Bongeslal. Uko ubaba uJaji. Mhlambe njengoba seke washo ukuthi bona abawo nama-developer nabama-facilitator. mhlambe bengake bechaze beyingonyama ngoba bengake bechaze beyingonyama thathu ngoba na last year besinabo lahle ngabuza ukuthi ingonyama thathu isebenza kanjani. Bathi no, ingonyama thathu isebenza njengoba ichaza. Ngiye ngisachaza chaze. Kodwa umbuzo wami uthi ingoma ingena kanjani ebantwini, ngoba mina ngiwubona umsebenzi ingonyama i-base on KwaZulu Natal kuphela, hhayi kwezinye amanye ama-province. Kodwa uma uthiyabheka yona iKwaZulu Natal ayisizakali ngengonyama yonke. Ngike ngihambe ngiyekhaya, ngihambe ngidonswa abantu bengibiza ngapha nami bethi hamba indlala, ngithi ingonyama thathu ikuphi, i-facilitator kuphi? Ngoba khona eduze kwabo lapha babanango, ngayihlola lento ngebabanango last year nanamhlanje ngisayisho, namhlanje futhi ingonyama thathu la ngisayibuza ngayo futhi babanango ukuthi kwenzakalani babanango ngonyama thathu, ngoba ngiqeda ukufonelwa abanye basentinini eduze kwenu lapha njengoba nithi nisiza abantu kodwa nihlula ukusiza laba la eduze kwenu. Ma uthi ukhuluma nabo abantu abanye ngomhlaba bathi hhayi abanye bathi abanye ababantu bakuphi bathi abanye bathi kukhona i-trust engonyama kodwa thina la asiyazi ukuthi ikuphi i-trust. BakwaZulu Natal empinini ngaphansi kwebabana umbuzo wami uthi hayi bo, ingonyama trust inezimali ezevela la ukuthi inazo kodwa ayidevelophi ama-facilities, yenzani ngalezi imali, ezokwenzani lezi imali kanti? Ngoba labantu basentinini bangifonela bathi bakhala ngendlala yokulima banomhlaba abawucele abawunikeze umasipala, bashoda ngocingo lokubiya, bashoda ngembewu, bashoda ngokanakanda. Ikuphi ingonyama trust iyofacilitator ke noma ingezibanika mali ihambe iyofacilitator isho ukuthi izotshela abantu ukuthi abanikele abantu imali or laba banikanakanda or laba banika imbewu or laba banika ucingo lokubiyela lo mhlaba abantu. Bengifonela ngila abantu basentinini eduze kongonyama. Mina ngi-understand into engonyama abantu into enjalo ule into yokwenza imali bahambe bethi ingonyama thathu kulaba abayizigwizi because abayi kulaba bantu abahlupheka ngempela, the poor people they don't know about the ingonyama thathu. Bayi ingonyama thathu eyenzayo ngoba phela ingonyama ifana inceda abantu emakhaya ahluphekile njengengonyama yabantu. Siyabonga.
Mangicaba ujudge did accept with the way of if they had more staff they would do more. Abakwazi ukufikelela kuyo yonke indawo and noba ungenzi umzekelo ngenze kuZulu noba ungenzi intilini noba ungenzi siyavuma ukuthi khona unkosi ngapha ukuthi mhlabulele kwenzani they can't abanastaff esanele and uphenduleli judge ngiphinda nje into oyishile ukuthi you could do more if you had staff complement to reach all these areas. Kodwa ke ngiyacabanga ukuthi mhlawumbe what we could do as the portfolio committee to work with the department so that the department collect all the partners which are listed in your report to reach those areas that ingonyama cannot reach ukwenzela globalize inkinga ezixosileke. Okwamanje ingathi ingonyama trust sibethe ngokwanele. Judge.
Thank you, Chair. I think there is one question by Honorable Nkosi Qebekhulu about, he spoke about the PTOs and that there is no traditional leader representing traditional leaders on the Ingonyama Trust Board. And then he asked about, with your permission, Chair, I can try and respond to that. Thank you, Chairperson. I think maybe like many structures in our society, the communication somewhere breaks down. The appointment of Inkosi in the board, the act has not changed. We still need Inkosi as one of the board members. But our act requires that a person who is a member of the board must not hold a political office
or have a high political profile, for want of a better word. We have made recommendations appropriately that there is this vacancy for Ingosi. We did that about 3 years ago. We understood that Ingosi was appointed, was nominated by the traditional leadership structure, but apparently either they did not have sight of what I'm saying. It was discovered that he was holding a political office for a political party, and therefore he could not meet the requirements of the Act, and therefore we conveyed that back to the traditional leadership. As we currently speak, we have written to the chairperson of the provincial house to say that is work in progress. As soon as they expedite that process, the recommendation will go to the minister for appropriate appointment. Insofar as the question of the register for PTOs, the question was whether we were not given the adequate information by the ex-KwaZulu government or whosoever. Like I said, PTOs are not registrable against the title of land, and therefore the chances of PTO documents getting lost are great. Furthermore, PTOs were issued without the necessary survey on land. Therefore, they don't serve any purpose anyway. Because as soon as you want to convert that PTO into a proper lease, you need to redo the survey. And therefore, one, we were given incomplete information about PTOs, either because the documents are in transit, but even if we can get to them, they don't add any value to us. We will have to start afresh and do the survey, and only then give a new lease. The question that I did not understand fully was the question of compliance. I think the Honorable Member made reference to Section 50 and so on. There I'm lost. I did not know what is the context. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I have noted that there are no further questions. And if I were to prod the members to ask follow-up questions, we will have lunch brought here. And therefore, because we have dispensed with the items on the agenda, I have been left with no choice but to adjourn the meeting. Okay. Thank you very much. We're meeting here, honorable members, the whole committee is required to meet here in this venue, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. 9. Thank you very much. And the department is meeting with the honorable members at, excuse me. Yes, the department comes here at 10. Thank you very much.